This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Too early in the game. But I thought I'd ask you just the same. What are you doing, New Year? New Year's Eve. One when it's exactly 12 o'clock that night, welcoming in the new year.
Good afternoon. And happy New Year's Eve to each and every one of you. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I want to thank you for being here with me on New Year's Eve. And I want to wish you and yours a very, very happy New Year. May it bring you all that you hope for and more. In taking some time off from the show, we recorded this show ahead of time. But I wanted to share with you some of my favorite New Year's memories, and then we'll share some favorite segments from some of my recent shows that I hope are appropriate through this time. And again, we hope that you have an absolutely wonderful New Year's Eve and that you have enjoyed your holidays. I know I have appreciated the time off. Very thankful for all of that. Coming in, you heard a little Harry Connick Jr. Singing, I forget what the title is, What Are You Doing New Year's, right? A very famous song. I have been obsessed with Harry Connick Jr. since basically like my freshman year of high school when his first album came out. My parents, of course, got a big chuckle out of that. He's just a Frank Sinatra ripoff, right? And I thought, he's a little different than old Blue Eyes. In particular, because Mr. Harry Connick Jr. is from New Orleans, and he himself is can play many instruments, and he wrote a lot of his own stuff. And so I think his sound, while certainly comparable to the crooners, right, like writ large, where you can talk Bing Crosby, you can talk Frank Sinatra, etc. But his sound has this New Orleans funk, and I think his voice does too, and the way that he sings the music is a little distinguishable there. So one of the first memories I wanted to share with you was so Harry Connick inspired. If you listen to our show on Christmas Eve, I shared with you that my parents and I went to go see Wynton Marsalis and jazz at Lincoln Center one holiday season. Well, just 2 years ago, I took my folks to see Harry Connick when he was doing his Christmas tour in Milwaukee, and that was an incredibly special moment. I think my parents were blown away by what a charismatic showman Harry Connick Jr. is. I mean, he really talks to the audience. He brought this woman up who is dressed as a reindeer. She sang with him. He did impromptu stuff. It was really, really fabulous. So it was another one of those great holiday memories that I got to share with my parents, because we've gotten to this place. We're fortunate enough to be in a place where we don't want any more stuff. What we want are shared memories together. And that is really what is most special. So we've started that tradition of trying to go and experience something together as a family. I don't know if I've shared with all of you, I'm an only child, which I hated growing up. Way too much attention. Couldn't get away with a gosh darn thing. But as I'm older and my parents are getting older, it's meant that our time together, just the three of us, is all the more special. And I've been so blessed since I've come back to Milwaukee to be able to live just about a 5-minute drive from my parents. So I feel very, very blessed and fortunate. I hope all of you have been able to spend some time with your loved ones throughout this holiday season. And this brings up another memory that I wanted to share with you. When I was growing up, my dad's sister, Bonnie, used to throw what can only be called the most fabulous of New Year's Eve parties. And as I was an only child, I, you know, tagged along for these because my folks, they're not going to saddle some poor babysitter with a New Year's Eve babysitting gig. And I didn't have siblings to keep me out of trouble. So I got to tag along. Now, here's what was so incredible about my aunt. First of all, she was just so amazingly fabulous. Her nails were always perfect. She smelled great all the time. She dressed fabulously. She was a ballroom dancer, and she could sing and dance and play the piano. And so these New Year's Eves were often filled with all kinds of sing-alongs, as well as some pretty funny bits that she and her good friends, Marcella and Lois, would put on. And one of them was the sisters' routine from White Christmas, you know, sisters, I won't sing it, don't worry. That thing, they even got the fans one year, if you can believe that. It was so much fun. And I always felt like I was getting away with a little something as a kid, right? Because I was usually the only child at the party and, you know, just hanging around the edges, watching, you know, the adults sing, dance, be merry, have a couple cocktails, and just really enjoy themselves. So that was always very special for me. And my aunt would usually make a point to search me out at some point during the evening and spend some very special time with me and express to me how very proud she was of me and how much she loved me. So she's been gone for a few years now. So hey, Aunt Bonnie. Happy New Year to you. Sorry, y'all. Give me a second here. That was really special. But one of the things that I always thought, in addition to all of those wonderful memories that I have, here was the other really cool thing about that event. I don't know about you, but if I think back to the late 70s and the 80s, it seems to me we were always getting some horrifyingly massive snowstorm on New Year's Eve. Like bad feet of snow. And here's one of the things that was always part of that that event was that Bonnie's older friends would always have a ride home with someone, that we would take great care to make sure that everyone got home safely. I have distinct memories of my dad shoveling out cars, making multiple trips to shuttle people home. And again, that idea of being together, the togetherness of caring about one another, and taking that care to make sure that everybody's okay, I always took with me as sort of the takeaway theme and spirit of those evenings. And I always felt so inspired. And again, joyful, happy, and ready for the new year after sharing all that time. And of course, great food and all that came with it. And the last little bit of that memory that I want to share with each of you is that my aunt's house was quite small. So this sucker was packed to the gills, and she would clear out, you know, like her regular furniture. There'd be the big dining, she'd put in a big folding table and put the fancy table. It looked gorgeous. And then it was that, which after the dinner would get broken down so people had space to dance. And then she had her upright piano, right? And it was in this little house. So she didn't do a Christmas tree because this was her big thing, was the New Year's party. And the tree just practically took up too much space. So her big decoration in her home, which was on the near northwest side of Milwaukee, little bungalow, off of a street called Burdick. Isn't it amazing you can remember those things from your childhood? She used to decorate her big front window that had a significantly deep sill to the nines, with hanging lights and icicles and silver and white snowflakes. And it became this incredible, like, rivaling, you know, Bloomies on Fifth Avenue in New York. Fabulous thing. And she also had those little Christmas villages on the deep sill with the fake snow and the little people and the trees, and they light up. And I would spend a goodly hour or so as a small kid inspecting every inch of that winter wonderland that my Aunt Bonnie created. It was really special. So again, I just want to wish each and every one of you and your families a happy, happy New Year's Eve. Please be safe out there. Take care of one another. That's one of the things that I want you to hear from me today. Make sure everybody gets home safely. Please do not drive. If you've had any cocktails, call that Lyft or Uber. Make sure your friends and family all get home safe. And I wish you all the best from me to you for a wonderful 2025. I can't wait to come back and be with you live for my first show in 2025 on January 6th. I'll be back in the chair. And again, my thanks to everyone at Civic Media for giving me a little bit of time off. So we're going to close out this segment before we have some of that special curated content that we'll have for you for the rest of this Maggie Dawn show on New Year's Eve. We're going to close it out with a little bit more of Harry Connick Jr. and What Are You Doing on New Year's? Thanks for sharing it with us here at Civic Media. Happy New Year's, everybody.
Maybe it's much too early in the game. But I thought I'd ask you just the same. What are you doing, New Year's? New Year's Eve. Wonder whose arms will hold you good and tight when it's exactly 12 o'clock that night. Welcoming in the new year, New Year's Eve. Maybe I'm crazy to suppose I'd ever be thousand invitations you receive.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Happy New Year, everybody. You're listening to the best of the Maggie Dawn Show. Thanks for tuning in this holiday season. What is up, Wisconsin? Welcome or welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name's Maggie Dawn, host of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is an extraordinary privilege to be joined by my very special next guest. Her name is Olivia Troy. She is a self-styled John McCain Republican. She's an American national security official. She worked for the Republican National Committee right out of college and then began her career in national security after the September 11th attacks. She served the Pentagon as a George W. Bush administration appointee. She was an intelligence official in the DHS Office of Intelligence and Analysis, serving as a chief of strategy, policy, and plans. And she worked in the office of the Vice President of the United States for Mr. Mike Pence as the Homeland Security and Counterterrorism Advisor. She also served as an aide to the White House Coronavirus Task Force. Also including all of that incredible resume,
part of her brief when she worked in the Trump White House as an aide to Vice President Pence was disaster relief. And so, Ms. Troy, first, thank you for making time for us. And second of all, let's start there with disaster relief. The former MAGA president has said some incredibly untrue and inflammatory things about the Biden-Harris administration, indicating that President Biden and Vice President Harris are holding up disaster relief to certain areas of the country run by Republican governors. Your reactions to that, because you have some firsthand experience with that kind of politicking with American lives, if you will.
Yes. Well, Maggie, thanks for having me. It's so great to join you today. And thank you for the thoughtful introduction. I've got to be honest with you. It has been very infuriating to watch Donald Trump politicize this week when so many Americans are in need right now. And it's just been so awful to see these communities and the impact of Hurricane Helene. But, you know, it's always projection with Donald Trump when he's accusing others. I'll say that. And I think, you know, first of all, these are complete lies, just to be very clear, right? I mean, he is flat out lying about what he's saying about the Biden administration's response to the Hurricane Helene in these communities. And the reason I call it projection is because those of us who worked in the Trump administration, I worked on disaster relief. I worked on the coordination of release and disaster relief to these communities at times, whether it was, I mean, I worked floods, I worked hurricanes, I worked tornadoes, I worked mass shootings. I mean, the gamut of us. I think Mike Pence used to call me his bad news bear because when he saw me walking in, he was like, here it comes. This isn't going to be good. She's going to tell me something bad has happened. And time after time, Donald Trump would sit on the disaster relief declaration sometimes. They would be sitting on his office, on his desk, and he would be weighing it depending on how he felt about the politics of the day or that county. And I saw him do it on the wildfires with California. He felt California is a Democrat state. We're not going to release the aid there. And at times we actually, people had to tell him, like, by the way, that county actually voted for you, the majority of them. I say that because disaster relief should never be politicized. That shouldn't even enter a president's mind when Americans are in need. That should be it shouldn't even be anywhere near the conversation. And so watching Donald Trump try to spin that and say that the Biden administration is doing this, I know firsthand that that's because Donald Trump, that's how he thinks of the world. He thinks of it as an opportunity that he's in a moment of power where he can pull, you know, the strings on this, and it's to the detriment of Americans, right? It's hurting them. And so he's also hurting Americans today by doing that because he's lying to them. He's making Americans who are already hurting even more upset. And it's just complete disinformation. And it's reckless. It's reckless for someone who wants to be president of the United States again to behave this way. And I think people, voters, should take note of this because today it's that community. The next day, you know, tomorrow it could be yours. And it won't matter. Like, I tell people this. Florida, if he has a falling out with Ron DeSantis as a Republican governor, it's all about vengeance. Right.
Well, to Wisconsin voters, to your very point, Olivia, this is a state with a Democratic governor. Heaven forbid, everyone that's listening, every Trump supporter, every independent, every undecided voter, if a terrible natural disaster was to hit this state and Donald Trump, according to the woman that was in the White House in 2018 when it happened, Miss Olivia Troy, my guest today, by her recollection, Donald Trump is likely to not approve aid because we are run by Tony Evers as our governor. This matters. People may die because he wants to play politics with American lives. Again, this most recent reporting coming out of Politico's E&E News that again, you and your colleague Mark Harvey had to literally show Donald Trump the voting numbers from Republican counties in California in order to get the disaster aid relief released in 2018. Now, Mark Harvey has been an outspoken critic. He's come out since the Trump administration. You did so in 2020. You've continued to be an outspoken critic, though again, a self-styled John McCain Republican. You have deep national security and disaster experience, again, running the gamut, as you stated. Liz Cheney was recently in Ripon, Wisconsin, the birthplace of the Republican Party here in this country. What do you have to say, Olivia? Talk to these swing voters or undecideds or traditional conservatives in the state, conservatives of good conscience in the state of Wisconsin. How should they view these hundreds of former Trump administration officials, of which you are one, who have come out and said, not only is he unfit, not only is he a risk to the health and wellness of every single American and our democracy, but I will also voice my support and will be voting for Kamala Harris. What is your message to these voters here in the state?
I think it's important to understand that, I mean, this is completely unprecedented, right? I mean, to have this many people who know Donald Trump, like, so well. We worked with him. We saw what he was like on a daily basis. And these are all very conservative voices. These are Bush alumni. These are Romney alumni, McCain alumni. All of these coalitions are coming together and saying, we've got to take a stand against the extremism of what Donald Trump brings. And he is a danger for our country. And we can disagree on policy issues. But right now, what matters is coming together to stand against this extremism, because we want to preserve our democracy. We want to protect America as we stand today. And so a Donald Trump presidency will be the end of that.
Thank you so much. That is Olivia Troy, an American national security official who worked in the George W. Bush administration and worked in the Trump White House directly for Vice President Pence, a John McCain Republican, a conservative. Thank you, ma'am, for your service to this country and your fearlessness in speaking the truth to American voters. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We'll be back with more after these brief messages.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Happy New Year, everybody. You're listening to the best of The Maggie Dawn Show. Thanks for tuning in this holiday season. Don't worry, I'll be back live on the airwaves January 6th. Between now and then, we've got a great slate of guest hosts for you. Show go by nice and fast, and there is no better guy to be talking to this Friday than Civic Media's very own political editor, Dan Schaefer. We are approaching the end of the year, Dan. It's time for some reflection.
It's time for some reflection, some recombobulation.
Some recombobulation. We're going to call the next hour. Dan's going to be with me for a whole hour, y'all. Really excited to do this with you. The Time Magazine cover, Man of the Year with Donald Trump, just dropped. How very exciting. But we're going to recombobulate 2024, and then we're going to precombobulate 2025.
That's right. That's right. Before we all get there, and we'll get discombobulated all over again.
Yes. And then we'll return to form, as it were. First of all, let's just, on a personal, how are your holiday preparations going?
You know, it's going well. I'm not a huge holiday person generally, okay, but I have two young kids. And so that has certainly changed the holidays for me. So I've got two girls, one 8 and almost 4. So they love Christmas. They're very excited. They're singing all the songs, watching all the Christmas movies. We're having a good time.
So are there any Christmas movies or songs that you are now like, I have heard this way too much and I have to have earplugs if I hear it again?
It is my youngest daughter loves the song, I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas.
Okay.
Do you know this one at all?
I do not.
Okay.
I do not have young children.
It's recorded in like the 50s or something like that. And it just absolutely gets stuck in my head every time. And she likes to sing along with her little girl voice to it, which is very adorable. But as soon as anybody even mentions like a line from that song, it will be stuck in my head for the rest of the day.
Oh, it's an earworm.
It's an earworm. Oh, yeah.
Those are the worst. I've always had like sort of waffled on all in for Christmas, but I have to admit, I do like the tree. I like having a nice tree. I like watching movies with like all the lights off and just the tree.
Just the tree. Now, do you do a real tree?
No.
Okay, so we still do the real tree.
Oh, that's a lot of work, my friend.
Yes, it is a lot of work. But
so do you go big or you try to get... Because it's like the reason I eventually broke and went to the fake tree was because my place was small and I needed a narrow tree.
Yeah.
And you... Those do not exist in the real life.
No, not so much. So usually we'll just get something from like, you know, one of the hardware stores around town or something like that. This year we went to this Christmas tree farm in somewhere in Ozaukee County around Grafton or something like that. And it was one of those places you could chop down your own tree. We didn't end up doing the chop down your own tree because it was pretty cold and we didn't want to have the girls outside for too long. But
I love how you say, oh, it was because I didn't want the girls to be outside in the cold. I'll let you go with that, Dan.
All right. But they did, in true Wisconsin form, they were giving out shots of Jameson at the Christmas tree farm to keep people warm around, which, you know, that I did partake in.
This is like the Axe Bar. Like, let's have people chop down trees and do that with whiskey.
Only in Wisconsin.
Listen,
right?
I'm not going to over-lawyer that as concept. We'll just let that go. I'm glad. Did you find, like, the perfect tree?
We did.
That's just so much fun. Yeah. My parents and I, we did real trees the whole time growing up. I was an only child. So, like, my parents had to sort of participate in the Christmas and holiday excitement with me because I had no siblings to sort of bounce that energy off of. And I distinctly remember standing in a lot of Stein's parking lots with my little kid arms, like holding the two trees, trying to keep them up. You know, as my dad, you got to stand back. Is the trunk straight? How is it? Turn the trees, you know, as you're trying to do that with my little kid hands and the sap all over the place. So a lot of fond memories. I know we're going to talk again next week, but hope you and your family have a beautiful weekend in your holiday preparations coming up here, Dan. But let's get into it. Donald Trump, cover of Time magazine, man of the year. I got a couple of angry text messages from friends about this. And I said, Time isn't, it's not like the best person of the year.
Right.
It's just person of the year.
Right. And I think every president is pretty, anytime there's a president elected, I think it's about every
usually
time it's
a
person
gimme,
of the year.
Right. Yeah. Like it would have been Kamala Harris had she won.
Right.
But it, you know, rolling the tape back to where we all were in January. First of all, on a personal level, neither you nor I were full-time employed by Civic Media. So we've had some changes.
That's right. We have had some changes.
But it has been a roller coaster of a year. What stands out to you on either the national or state level?
Yeah, I was going through the archives of the recombobulation area of the things that I had written over the course of the year to just, you know, I've been doing this, our own year in review stuff, but also to get ready for this segment here. And it was just, there's just so many elections that we've had in Wisconsin this year. And it's not just, you know, obviously the November election is going to be the big political story of the year. But just going back, like the spring election was a big deal. The summer partisan primary that had, you know, those constitutional amendments on the ballot was a big deal. I just feel like we have not been able to escape the election cycle for one second.
It does feel kind of like road construction. Like it's 365 days a year. And we're now going to ramp up it. We'll save that for the pre-combobulation.
That's right.
For 2025. Remind folks, what was the big emphasis, if you will, in the 2024 spring election cycle? Then we'll get to the partisan primary and those constitutional amendments.
Yeah, so the spring election one, that was the statewide referendum questions on that one were the Zuckerbucks related ones, which I had written a couple columns talking about how it was just, you know, just a latest ridiculous kind of power grab from the Republicans, but they just kind of sneak these in there. And I think the other big one, at least here.
Tell people, just so in case people don't remember, what was the controversy and what was the amendment trying to do or purported to do?
Yeah, so the so-called controversy was that there were nonprofits that were funding some certain levels of election administration, especially in the 2020 election.
Yeah, in 2020, because of COVID.
Mm-hmm. And there was this nonprofit that was connected to Mark Zuckerberg. And so, like, all of the Republicans got whipped into a frenzy thinking that Mark Zuckerberg was trying to steal the election by funding all of these nonprofit things, which, you know, study after study bore out that this was not the case.
Well, and it's sort of a stupid presumption, right?
Right.
Like, the idea is that simply by donating to election administrators that somehow impacts the outcome.
Right.
And he directed the donations during COVID to the larger jurisdictions, which do admittedly lean left. But he did that because they have the largest populations and it was the hardest to do given all of the health risks because of COVID,
right,
and the stupid rule in Wisconsin that we can't open a single absentee ballot until the day of the election.
Right.
Okay, so that was, and the amendment purported to do what exactly?
It was trying to ban private dollars from being in public elections. And it was just like, okay, on balance, like, that can sound good. And I think that's probably why it ultimately passed. But I think it opens up the door for all sorts of other problems. And, you know, it would have been one thing if Republicans passed this and saying, hey, we're going to get, you know, all nonprofit dollars out of election administration, turn around and then properly fund election administration.
But they, of course, didn't do that.
And they will never do that.
And they continue to weaponize
that process against large cities, against, you know, more liberal leaning places to create this presumption of fraud that they always like to bring in.
That's what I thought was really insidious about this, right, is that, no private donations related to election funding. I'd be all for that as a constitutional amendment, again, if elections were funded enough. But the reality is that funding levels, especially in the bigger cities with the bigger populations, just simply aren't enough. They've also tried to ban anybody, we'll get to that because that was another constitutional amendment. So that was the spring election, had this constitutional amendment on it.
Yeah, and the column I wrote about it at the time was had the headline, "Good in Theory, Bad in Practice, Worse in Process," which was...
That about nails it.
Yeah. So the other big thing from that particular spring election, at least as far as southeastern Wisconsin and the Milwaukee area is concerned, was the referendum on MPS.
Yes.
And that narrowly passing in the April election. And I think that was, you know, so often Milwaukee can... we see this with shared revenue. We see this with school funding. Milwaukee can get blamed unfairly for a lot of things.
Yep.
Of course, you want to hold your public officials accountable at every level.
Yep.
But I think it's not a case of Milwaukee was, you know, whole scale having all these problems. But it was also that, you know, it was a sign of things to come with the referenda that we saw across the state for schools in a lot of ways.
Yeah, there's...
Now, MPS has its own specific problems with its administration. But the funding levels of it, I think, goes back to, just the fact that schools across the state are now doing this. And in Milwaukee, it just happened to be kind of... Early in the process. Tip of the spear, of course.
Yeah. Folks, that's Dan Schaefer. He's the political editor here at Civic Media. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. We're doing the recombobulation of 2024, some highlights, maybe some of the stuff on a state or local basis that you've forgotten about. The points I wanted to give a little zip to about what you were saying is Robin Voss a couple weeks ago on Upfront made an argument or a statement that the last biennial budget from the state represented a once-in-a-generation funding increase for public education. And I'm going to say this really clearly. You liar, Robin Voss. What the Republican-controlled state government, going back to 2010 when they took over all three branches, have done is systematically defunded public education in this state. At the same time, again, we've now seen the interrelationship between this historic reduction in overall tax burden for Wisconsin residents Again, I had Jason Stein on earlier this week talking about this very thing. And that was exactly coupled with the single largest expenditure, line item expenditure, if you will, in the state budget, education, getting slashed. Exactly. So what Robin Voss was saying was, yes, it was an increase over prior budget years, but you guys had gutted public education. It doesn't even keep, our educational funding doesn't even keep up with inflation. I asked Jason Stein, do you know the last time that we adjusted this public school funding formula? And he's like, well, there's tweaks every year, but the fundamental formula, he's like, I've been around the state capitol for 20 years and I can't even remember when that was. I mean, there's a, every kid has a smart book in their hands now. It's just stupid. So those were the two big ones. And the last thing I wanted to say about this and then get your reaction to this is I think there are a lot of valid criticisms of the governance of Milwaukee Public Schools. I think the school board has failed the students. I think school board elections don't get nearly enough press and coverage. We've had people that have should have had no business being on a school board on the school board. And yet this is one of those things where like both things are true. MPS governance needs to be much more accountable. They actually hired the former comptroller for the city of Milwaukee to come in and try to clean it up, Ijesawa. That's true. And it's also true that the state government has systematically defunded all public school systems, rural and urban, across the state. Like, this is one of the, you got to be able to have both ideas in your head at the same time.
Yeah, and I think you're seeing now with all these referenda, it's a shell game. And what they're doing is a shell game and moving funds around and saying that, like, hey, if local communities want to vote to raise their taxes, that's what that's up to them. But at the same time, we're sitting on this, you know, $4+ billion surplus that exists because
of these slashing of, these of educational
slashing
funding.
Of education fundings. Absolutely.
So that is the that was the spring 24 election. Then we had the partisan primary. Lots of action, especially on the Democratic side because of the new maps. What did you think about that partisan primary? Very briefly, we got about a minute.
Yeah, so that was one that Democrats got more organized against the constitutional amendments there, and then ended up winning essentially that that battle on that in that partisan primary. It was the first time there was ever a constitutional amendment in a partisan primary.
Low turnout elections.
Democrats spent a lot of money to put the vote no on both of those amendment questions, and they were successful on both ends. So I think that
when
was,
we come back, Dan's going to remind us all what those two, I think, relatively more important constitutional amendment questions were during this past year's partisan primary. We're going to continue to recombobulate 2024. I'm talking with Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's political editor. And don't forget, we're going to precombobulate 2025 and tell y'all what you might want to keep your eye on in the coming year. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to the best of The Maggie Dawn Show, Auld Lang Syne and all that. Happy New Year, everybody. About you all, but I have a hard time talking over Arrested Development. It's good fun. We got Cardi on the board and Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's political editor, in the booth with me. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are recombobulating 2024, especially reminding us of the important stuff that happened on the state and local level in this last year's political cycle and precombobulating for 2025. Dan, we were talking about the partisan primary that was kind of mid-year last year that had two constitutional amendments on it. And they both went down. They were losers for the proponents of the amendments, which I have to be honest, I was a little surprised by. Because those partisan primary elections are routinely low turnout. And when you have low turnout, that generally bodes more favorably for conservative candidates and conservative causes. These two constitutional amendments were basically forced onto the ballot by the GOP-controlled legislature. So remind us what they were, Dan.
Yeah, so there were these two very confusingly worded questions about how federal funds are allocated at the state level. And basically, it really dramatically changed the way federal funds come to Wisconsin and who has the oversight on there. And it again, as so many of these often are for Republicans, it is a power grab.
Yeah.
It was a way for Republicans to control a process that they were not fully able to control during COVID when Tony Evers was governor and they, you know, disagreed with the way that he was spending some of those federal funds. But, you know, the people of Wisconsin voted for Tony Evers and not Scott Walker. So he gets to be the governor and govern.
And they both were trying to do the same thing. The distinctions between them are immaterial. They both right. sought to inject the legislature into what was an executive, an executive branch, frankly, exclusive authority. This to me, Dan, was notable, not only because they were voted down, good for you, Wisconsin voters, but secondly, because of the fact that this stands in a long line of what I'm going to call per se cheating by Republicans in the state of Wisconsin. And what I mean to say, Dan, is when Tony Evers was first elected, the Republicans rushed back to work and then changed a bunch of laws to strip the governor's office of a bunch of powers. They were fine when Scott Walker had the power and they had full control of state government. But when a Democrat was elected to the governor's office, all of a sudden they had all kinds of concerns about the governor's powers. So they cheated then to reduce the governor's authority and strip a lot of power. This was the same version of that some now many years later into his second term. Again, what's good for me is different than what's good for thee. It's sort of the operating principle of the Republican Party. I was very happy to see that outcome. So that brings us up into the fall election cycle with our new maps. And how did that bode out as we recombobulate 2024?
Yeah, so I think that was, I'm doing my review of what the recombobulation area stories that I wrote for the year. And so the big topic that I was writing about in January and February was the new maps, the process that the Wisconsin Supreme Court had ordered to get to new maps. And there was kind of this convoluted process with it in January. A bunch of different parties submitted maps. Then there were people overseeing this process. Eventually, the state legislature kind of realized that saw the writing on the wall and passed these maps that were introduced by Tony Evers and kind of dared Evers, hey, are you going to veto your own maps? Well, he didn't. He signed his own maps. And those are the maps that we had on the ballot. And so as I did at the recombobulation area the couple election cycles prior, and now this year as being part of the Civic Media Network, I'm the one guy crazy enough to preview all 115 races on the ballot, every race in the Senate and Assembly in the Wisconsin State Legislature under these new maps. And so, that was obviously a huge part of what I was doing in September, but obviously a big part of the state election formula. You know, a lot of oxygen taken up by the top of the ticket with what was happening with the change from Joe Biden to Kamala Harris, the Senate race, what have you. But, you know, these local elections, these state legislative elections can really have such an impact on your day-to-day life as a Wisconsinite. So we had, far more competitive races than we had in a really long time. Yeah. When I had done this in previous election cycles, there was like one or two toss-up races. This year we had like eight or nine.
Yeah, you had a lot to talk about.
Yeah. So it was a much different dynamic.
And I just want to remind people, competitive districts that are fairly drawn are better for Republicans and better for Democrats, no matter who wins. The reason that this is not a debatable statement, that is an axiom, is because when districts are competitive, no matter who wins, they must be responsive to the voters. And so this isn't about like forced bipartisanship. It's called forced responsiveness. Listen, if you just take politicians and forget the ones that you know and love, but you take politicians writ large, if they don't have to try very hard and they can just win every time, human nature, y'all, right? Mm-hmm. Human nature, folks, that's what happens. But when the districts are competitive, it serves everyone in that district better. It's why I so oppose partisan gerrymanders as we've had in this state. They need to be fair. They need to be fair everywhere. I say, don't let legislators pick their voters anymore. Let's get an independent redistricting commission. Folks, I'm with Dan Schaefer, political editor for Civic Media. We got to take care of some top of the hour business. We're going to come back. We'll do a little moments more of reflection on the recombobulation of 2024. And then we're going to maybe move on to some precombobulation of 2025. You're not going to want to miss 1 second of it. News, weather, and sports updates are next. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.